Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Hello and welcome to the Media Podcast. I'm Matt Deegan. On today's show, the media bill is back, but what's changed? We'll tell you all you need to know. Also on the programme, Boris Johnson heads to GB News, Jess Brammer to the top table at the BBC, and a new radio service appears in Gaza. All that, plus in the media quiz, we set the record straight. That's all coming up on this edition of the Media Podcast. In the news this week, the Daily Mail's bid for The Telegraph is focused on the broadsheet's potential in the US, according to Press Gazette. A DMGT says the paper's existing subscription model could strengthen its own business. The Middle East crisis continues to present issues for publishers. This week, United Agents head of comedy Kitty Lang stepped down from her role for a series of tweets that she described as naive. And then later this week, cartoonist Zoom Rockman parted ways with Private Eye. The magazine released a statement on Thursday that we spoke to Zoom at length yesterday. He did not approve of the last issue's cover and no longer wishes to contribute to the magazine. And The Economist has placed all their audio shows behind a paywall. All that is, except for The Intelligence, their most popular show. Its director of podcasts, John Prideaux, said that a subscription-based podcast strategy will become increasingly common following tech changes by providers such as Apple and Acast. Now, joining me at the London Podcast Studios are two free-to-air media commentators, public service pundits, if you will. First up, it's media writer Maggie Brown. Hello.
Hello.
I gather you've been wined and dined by the BBC this week.
No, not particularly. They're having a big Shakespeare extravaganza. That's the basic thing. And I went to the Globe and there were just a lot of people who you occasionally bump into because they're very grand. So it was a very useful event for me. And I was very pleased, actually.
There we go. And alongside Maggie, we welcome back the entertainment director of Heat Magazine, Boyd Hilton.
Thank you.
You've made it very clear you need to be gone pretty swiftly. What are you trying to get to?
I've got a 6:30 screening nearby of a film called Next Girl Wins, which is a kind of comedy drama fictionalised version of the documentary of the same name about the American Samoan football team trying to get into the World Cup.
Right.
And it was a lovely documentary, great, and I'm very much looking forward to this film version. Directed by Taika Waititi, so it should be, should be decent.
And what have your screening highlights been over the past few weeks? What should we be looking out for?
I've seen quite a lot recently. There's a thing called... All these things are embargoed, of course. Mm. You're not supposed to talk about them, what can they do? I saw a thing called Boat Story this week, which is from the Williams brothers, who did The Tourist and many other things. And it was... if I wasn't embargoed, I'd say it was very, very good.
And what's that going to be
exciting.
On?
BBC One. It's going to be on the BBC One.
A linear TV channel.
Yeah, Sunday, Monday coming up in a few weeks' time.
Well, long may they.
I know.
Flourish.
Speaking of that, King Charles is set to announce his first King's Speech to Parliament on Thursday, and within it will be more information on the long-awaited media bill. This has been ruminating for quite a long time. Maggie, can you remind us what's in it? Might be in it? Because we don't know whether it gets included, do we?
Well, I think that there seems to be a quiet air of calm around the broadcasters, I would say. And I do think that it is in the bill, but of course, events happen. I think the key thing that we do know about is that it's been accepted that the public service broadcasters, ITV, Channel 4, all the rest of it, should basically be given prominence on whatever guides of the future bring to us as viewers. And this is a security guarantee to some extent. I mean, you can't make people watch anything. But I do think that is pretty much, signed and sealed. the things, of course, which they, the other thing which we can discuss here, because it is a big move, and I was not initially in favour of this, but Channel 4 is going to get the right to not just commission programmes, it can make and it can keep the rights to the programmes. Now, we're not sure how much of its, if there's any a figure put on this, any percentage, but at first I thought it was a really bad idea, because as we know, Channel 4 was founded and began in 82 very much as a commissioner only. And of course it has actually fed this incredible growth in independent production.
Well, one of the questions is always, you know, they make these programmes famous, they pay for them initially, yes, and then the production companies go off and sell them around the world, and they just get an
occasional millionaires.
Thank you.
Yes. Well, I think it's, what I actually think is, why I changed my mind really, is that it's quite clear Channel 4 does need bolstering, and it is purely at the moment dependent on advertising and a few other things. Films, of course, if they make a hit film, which they do from time to time. So as I started looking back over, and remember, I wrote my second Channel 4, really, a history which sort of ended in 21, 22. I was very much caught up in the final, you know, bits of COVID affecting everybody. And as I thought about it, I was thinking of all the problems that have led to Channel 4 having quite a weak schedule, including programmes I just cannot watch, which are basically sponsored programmes. There's a lot of sponsorship going on. Now, It matters, because we do want the best quality we can possibly get from a channel like that, that has a lot of freedom if it chooses to exercise it, and has of course, you know, produced a lot of really good original both work and stars. So from that point of view, I was worried during the long debate about privatisation that if I said anything about it particularly, apart from saying the status quo is a good idea, we would actually be alienating one of their huge supporters, which is, of course, the production sector. But now I think that this is the time to actually free up Channel 4. And I think we'll have I think that is definitely going through. What's interesting me, though, too, is that if you've been, and I have been listening to a lot of the debates going on in quite high places, there's a definite sense that they're, that the government wants a strong public service broadcasters. And I do think that they're operating now in a much kinder and understanding regime, despite, you know, attempts to say what is impartiality, what is this, what is that. I think that there's
It does seem sort of much more benevolent.
Benevolent, and also the fact is that however you look at it, you do have to have your own national broadcasters, or whatever, content makers, whatever we want to call them. And I think that, to go back to the Shakespeare season, which is happening, when it starts unravelling properly going on air and also being released, we'll see again the BBC doing things which only they can do. I mean, for example, they're going to be digging up or showing Shakespeare plays, including one that was made 100 years ago. So
what do you think of the current Culture Secretary?
Lucy Fraser, I think she's terrific. I think she's literally one of the best ones I've seen since the Conservatives formed a government in 2010. When you actually look back over these past 13 years, you can see the damage that has been done when you have a hostile government, BBC funding down 31%, S4C, the Welsh Channel, you know, 36% and struggling. We do need people in government who actually cherish the BBC, as not just people like me.
So Boyd, one of the plans is that the broadcasting code will start to apply for some of the streamers, or as they talk about it, the largest, most TV-like VOD services. Do you think it's going to affect Netflix, or are they sort of complying anyway?
I think they're sort of complying anyway, aren't they? I mean, Netflix and Prime Video and Disney Plus, all the streamers, they don't really go for the kind of controversial, newsy type coverage that, you know, a channel like GB News or whatever might end up, you know, being more challenging for Ofcom, unless they suddenly start, you know, commissioning, X Tory prime ministers to do chat shows or something like that.
It doesn't seem like a high rating strategy at the moment. No.
So I can't think. I mean, I tell you what is interesting about the streamers, about Netflix, is they kind of do their own rating of their shows. So they'll kind of slap a 12 certificate. And sometimes I think, these shows can be pretty edgy. I wonder whether Ofcom might end up slightly getting involved in that kind of thing. Which probably would worry those streamers. But I don't think there's much content, to use that horrendous word that everyone now officially hates, that should trouble Ofcom too much. Right now, yeah, I think it's fine.
Maggie, you talked a little bit about TV and getting on the EPGs and the public broadcasters. Mm. Well, they're actually expanding that potentially to radio as well, aren't they?
Yes.
And allowing or sort of instructing the sort of Amazon Echoes of this world to make sure that public service or licensed radio can appear on devices as well.
Yes, I mean, I'm all in favour of improving access wherever you can achieve it. One of the small things that's worrying me, though, because I live quite a lot of the time in Wales, is that whatever happens, that we do have to understand that there are parts of rural and remote parts of the UK where it is very difficult to both to access. I mean, often one's reduced to long wave, and it's not that people don't know about it. It's just that the whole of the media business is really driven by urban centres, and I think that does have to be considered. I'm also quite alarmed, but not totally alarmed, about the state of the Welsh language broadcasters. People forget really that it is not just a broadcasting or a media issue. It's a social settlement with a nation, as they call themselves, a country. So we do have to have a consideration for that. They are losing a little bit of their edge. It's partly, I think, because of some of the changes in distribution, and they were doing actually quite well when they were able to reach Welsh speakers across the UK, not just in Wales. That has come into a bit of a difficult period. So,
isn't there some leadership trouble?
There has been leadership troubles, and there's been a bit like Channel 4, where there's been pressure to ensure that you are commissioning not just in Cardiff, but so they have another base in Carmarthen. And they, of course, have this tense relationship with the BBC as well, which is now funding them. So there's a lot of tension around. On the other hand, we've seen them make very good bilingual dramas, and I'm sure Boyd would agree with me on this.
Yeah, that's been a great growth area. It's a really clever idea that they filmed these shows in the Welsh language and in the English language at the same time.
Exactly.
And those have done very well. Yeah.
But you see, they don't have a listed event in Wales like we have for other sports, even though they have, well, arguably a very good rugby team. And I'm very pleased to see one of the big new commissions they've got is for a rugby show to take kids from the streets and turn them into
superstars,
maybe.
Some other news from Channel 4. Ian Katz, the programming boss there, has asked Indies to think big as he announces the return of the Contestable Fund. Boyd, this is funded by Group M Entertainment, isn't it? These are sort of the people behind like the Love Island format, and they've got their hands in, or their fingers in a lot of TV pies, and they obviously continue to want to do that.
Yes. They're asking for indie ideas too bold for other broadcasters, which I think is obviously exactly what Channel 4 should be doing. And right from the start, as Maggie will tell us, that's been their remit, really. So it's kind of a reminder. But I do think they need that reminder. I think, as you alluded to, Maggie, before about, the current schedule, it does feel, I mean, people have been saying this for 30 years, but it does feel safe, I think it's fair to say,
and they haven't had any new hits on the top 10 for a little while.
Well, they needed another sort of It's a Sin, didn't they? They needed something like that.
Derry Girl. I mean, you can think they have a kind of huge, big highlight, and it's only in the scripted world, comedy and drama, every couple of years or so. I think at the moment it feels quite, at the moment, like their drama offerings seem to be mainly English language versions of All to Present shows.
Right, you know, and that
I think there's another one of those coming along quite soon, which doesn't feel very daring or bold. So I welcome the whole idea. I quite like to see, I might pitch, you know, if they do a dramatisation of how Nadine Dorries tried to privatise Channel 4, this woman who didn't understand how the funding of it worked. I quite like to see that turned into, it'll be a classic Channel 4, turn the Channel 4's recent victory over Nadine Dorries into a drama.
I mean, it's maybe like bring back a kind of comic strip presents.
Yeah, that would be perfect. You see the comic strip presents version of that story. Yeah,
Boyd,
exactly.
Yes, pitch it.
I might pitch it. Yeah, okay. If anyone's listening.
It's a First Media podcast from the Commissioning Hub. Well, we've got to get Group M to like it, I suppose, as well. It's got to have international...
They'll love it, Group M. You know, they're quite bold and daring and, yeah,
Do you think
words.
That the Bake Off is getting a bit stale or not?
Do you know what? I've always loved Bake Off. I find it's just it is a relaxing format. And even though, funny enough, last year it did have, there were various controversies about it. It seems to have settled down. I think Alison's doing well. So it's inherently, you can always say these formats are stale. Like any show that's been going on for that long maybe feels a bit stale, but I think it's fine. I think, you know, the fact it's got, they refresh the presenters or whatever every now and then. I think it's fine. It still does pretty well, doesn't it?
Are you watching Bake Off, Maggie?
No, I'm not.
No.
I'm to be honest, I've been pretty much concentrating on news and current affairs. And of course, there's been so much sport, and I live in a household of sport mad people. And you have to take a decision: are you going to actually go along with being interested in sport, or are you actually going to go and sit in another room and watch another?
I mean, it does raise an interesting point for linear channels, or traditionally linear channels, about having live programming or things that the streamers sort of can't compete with. And there's definitely been a lot of leaning into that by some of the channels.
Well, the streamers are showing more and more live. So, I mean, Prime Video still has a couple of big days, weeks of Premier League football action. They show all the games in various weeks, and there's another coming up soon before Christmas, I think, one of those events. Netflix, I think, had its first live golf, had kind of pro celebrity golfing thing. So I think they're all looking into that. So I think live sport isn't safe from the streams. Not that we should worry about it at all. I thought, you know, Prime Video's coverage of football was perfectly fine.
Maggie, we've been discussing the commissioning slowdown over the past few months from kind of all the channels, but there's been a bit of disquiet about Channel 4 and how it's dealt with some of the indies. Any of that being fixed, or is it still in the doldrums?
Well, I can't say I really know, because what I think is going on is something else. I think Channel 4 has had a lean period. It's now got, as far as I can see, I'm not entirely sure whether their decamping to Leeds is working or not. And then, of course, they have another two commissioning centres. And so I just don't think it's quite working as it ought to yet. And it may be, you know, that there's been a lot of turnover of commissioners.
Is that growing pains of Leeds? And obviously they've just lost, or they're about to lose, Steph's Packed Lunch from there. It was sort of quite an anchor commission.
Well, it was, but it's 2 hours in the day. Mm. And when it began, of course, what happened was that it was sad, really, but it's quite a brave idea to try and do it for 2 hours. And she was completely hit by COVID. Mm. So Steph McGovern had a time off, and then they relaunched it again. And the people behind it are very professional, but I have tried to watch it. And all I can say is that it never really, in my opinion, justified its
start. Oh, I liked it. I think it's a real shame they've got rid of it. Yeah, it felt like the slightly edgier, slightly younger version of it this morning or whatever.
Sort of echoes of Light Lunch and Lunch.
But I like the gang. It had a kind of real gang quality to it, you know. And I every time I watched it, I enjoyed it. I mean, I wouldn't say I'm a religious follower of it. This morning is still my...
preferred
more daytime show, magazine show of choice.
Ian Dale was spreading rumours on the media podcast the other week, saying that Steph McGovern might be off to the One Show.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised.
Mm. That'd be good.
I mean, she's a fan. Whatever you think of Steph's Packed Lunch, she's a fantastic broadcaster. Mm. I mean, you know, knowledgeable, incredibly natural. Like, there's an absolute, you know, some presenters have a kind of suddenly turn it on when the camera goes on. She's absolutely is like that, you know, as you see. So I think, you know, there's loads of shows that could attract her.
She's very experienced as a broadcaster at live television. Remember, this is really the trickiest thing to do. And I agree with you. They did improve it by having a gang, as it were, around her. There was a lot technically thought, you know, that they could polish up and go with, but it's 2 hours is a long time. It's probably a very expensive commission.
Why do you think they axed it?
Well, apparently it was just too expensive for the you know, for the audience. Yeah, I mean, these things are probably more expensive than you think. You know, you have, there's a lot
it's
of
big team.
Yeah, there's a big team on all these shows. So I think that's the simple reason. If it was, if it had more viewers and was getting more advertising, despite how much it costs, then, you know, they could probably put repeats of, you know, more repeats of Frasier on at that time.
Yeah, I think
and
that's
it would probably do just as well as it is, you know, that's the unfortunate thing about it.
And just before the break, Jess Brammer, who led the changes at the BBC News Channel, has moved up to become Charlotte Moore's right-hand woman, according to Broadcast Magazine. I think Jess has been on maternity leave, is about to go back to the BBC. She sort of set in motion a lot of the changes to bring together the two news channels. A tough job. Why do you think she's decided not to go back to that one?
Well, maybe she just didn't get on with Deborah Turness, who's actually running it. But I would say, from my own experience of what the bigwigs think at the BBC, they're very behind Deborah Turness and her approach. And they like, I mean, she is a hugely experienced executive. They like what she's doing. They're happier with her, I think, than they have been with previous or in previous times. And I think things like, you know, the fact-checking and the kind of change of pace that has occurred in some of the news programmes, given that they're under this tremendous pressure. I mean, this is one of the things that is so sad, that the news really has been messed around at the moment and the news channel isn't working properly. We all know that. Hopefully it will. But when I'm talking about the damage done to the BBC, our global broadcasting side and the World Service is really such an important aspect of the BBC as well. So I do think that we have to remember that there has been a terrible period of uncertainty and a lot of big names going. On the other hand, if we get reporting good, terse, factual, on-the-ground reporting from a new wave of BBC journalists who aren't thinking all the time politically, but are thinking about how we do this in the most accurate way possible, in clear language, informed, telling people what they need to know, even if they don't think they want to know. That's what we want from the BBC. We want trust. This debate about impartiality is a very sterile debate. It's not the way normal people think. They want to be informed and they want it straight and they want it from correspondence and people they respect. I mean, Steve Rosenberg is a very good example of this, but there aren't maybe enough of them there.
Well, also they need output, don't they, to be able to practice. And you can say that a more international domestic news channel potentially gives them that opportunity. It's been a bit of a difficult transition though, hasn't it?
Moving
BBC World into BBC News.
Oh, I mean,
news
honestly, it feels very amateurish still, the news channel now. So you compare it to Sky News. I mean, I've been watching quite a lot of both this week with the coverage of the COVID inquiry, and it's shocking how, and it almost feels like a point is being made that this is what happens if you're going to limit our
budget. This is what you're paying for.
Yeah, you're going to end up with a more amateurish service.
And That's a very good take.
I mean, it does feel that way to me.
Yes.
As for Jess Brammer, I mean, why would you go back to the poison chalice of dealing with all this news stuff when you can have a lovely job as Charlotte Moore's right-hand woman? And by the way, I think Charlotte Moore needs a huge amount. I think she does a brilliant job. Yeah. I think my dealings with her, I hosted an event recently which she took part in. She's such a kind of honest, down-to-earth, you know, knowledgeable person. I think I would love to be her right-hand person.
She's responsible for a ridiculous amount of stuff.
Correct.
I mean, just coping with your direct reports around that. You've got radio at one end, all the channels, iPlayer.
Content.
It's a lot.
All the content.
All the content. It's a lot to do.
She's a very warm personality.
She's a human being.
She's always polite. She doesn't come across as an arrogant person.
Yeah, completely. She's a proper person.
She's a real person.
Normal person. And the reason I think it's worth pointing out is because they're quite rare at the upper echelon of TV broadcasts, I have to say.
You're absolutely right. And I do think that attitude and also love of the BBC, all those things feed in and produce somebody that people want to work for. It's not actually that hard. But it is a very hard job.
Time for a break. We'll be back with more media news after this.
Hello, media podcast listeners. This week on The Two Matts, well, what did we do, Matt?
We went to see the esteemed, famous provocateur and philosopher Jordan Peterson speak to his flock at the O2. What a night, eh?
It was incredible. And we've got views.
We have views.
Which won't surprise people who know us.
Nope.
Find out all about what happened on that night and also what we think about Dominic Cummins, etc. at The Two Matts with me, Matt Kelly.
And me, Matt D'Ancona.
Find us in your podcast app right now. There's a link in the show notes.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com and get up to 15% off your first purchase as a member with code REBAGNEW. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAGNEW for up to 15% off your first purchase as a member.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Hello again, Maggie and Boyd are back with me for some stories in brief. Boris Johnson is coming to GB News. Starting next year, the disgraced former Prime Minister will join as a presenter, programme maker and commentator, according to Deadline. Boyd, great for GB News. What a come down for having been the Prime Minister.
Yeah, if he'd gone straight from hosting Have I Got News For You to this, that would have been fine.
It's just would have
saved everyone a lot of hassle and pain and misery and embarrassment, etc. That would have been fine. Yeah, so it's kind of, I don't really care about GB News at all. In my opinion, it's so pathetic that it feels like the right home for him among, you know, the conspiracy theorists wing of the Conservative Party or the right wing, kind of general right wing political
and Nigel
world.
Farage.
And Nigel Farage. I mean, I include him very much within that core grouping. So, of course, he's going to GB News. Mm. You know, it's like, of course, he's going to the Daily Mail to write completely inane nonsense for them, and now he's going to host completely inane nonsense, is my prediction for GB News.
It was an interesting thing because he's not probably doing sort of loads and loads for them. We're looking at his slightly badly recorded selfie video announcement of
terrible,
it. And obviously they'll kind of wheel him out and pop him up for things. Mm. But I imagine an expensive investment, but totally on brand for them.
Completely on brand. Mm. And, you know, yeah, he'll just give the whole channel, I guess. And if you're that kind of person, an air of, not respectability, an air of good old-fashioned excitement. But it feels to me that Boris Johnson, I think I saw when the announcement was made, a lot of the more right-wing kind of libertarian end of the GB News core audience, which I think is a big element of their viewership, doesn't like Boris Johnson anymore because they think he imposed the lockdown. Or
yes,
he did impose the
he's
lockdown.
He's not right-wing enough.
Yeah, he's not right-wing, mainly because of the lockdown and the, you know, these mad people think that, you know, injections have resulted in the redefining of social of people's
lives.
Well,
hearing Boris Johnson talk about having a hairdryer up your nose to get rid of COVID, sort of Trump shadows.
All of that nonsense. So he, you know, he's not in that crazy wing of the of conservatism, of right-wing politics. So, and obviously, and everyone else doesn't like him either. If you're even vaguely, you know, left to centre, then you find him a ridiculous figure as well. So I'm not quite sure who he's going to appeal to particularly. Mm. But it does give the channel some kind of air of importance, I guess, to have an ex-Prime Minister.
But it's also an election year that he's coming into, and that's where he's going to cause the most trouble. And that's why they've got him. I mean, this is going to be denouncing whoever he wants to denounce or attacking whoever he wants to, presumably, Rishi Sunak.
Yeah.
We don't know. So it's not... It's actually a pretty good stroke if you're GB News and you're investing in it. But for the rest of us, like, you know, Paul Marshall, the billionaire person who's backing it with other people, I think he'll probably go too far. And Or he won't. I don't know.
But Paul Marshall sort of needs to give GB News a sort of air of traditionalism to have a better chance of perhaps getting the Telegraph.
Well, he may do. I mean, and he wants the Telegraph. The point, I suppose, is that GB News, as we know, has a number of Ofcom complaints against it. It's not that it doesn't have some decent broadcasters on it, although I'm afraid I just am not a natural listener to it. But they do not make any attempt to really balance out, which the others do. And so it would be, I mean, one of their biggest boobs really was just having like-minded people interviewing each other. And that doesn't come across as a public service broadcaster.
They still do that.
I
watched 10 minutes of it today just because I thought it was coming on here.
I mean, they really are Fox News, really.
They are. They had a discussion about teachers possibly striking or complaining about being forced to wear uniforms or something like that. And they basically had like four people agreeing with each other and one poor guy in the middle who vaguely disagreed. And that's their version of impartiality.
And they've been warned, you see, but they go on doing it.
Yeah.
So
but they kind of, half the time, it's such a, there are grey areas, aren't there? So half the time they kind of get away with some of those.
You are perfectly allowed in current affairs programming to have people from the same party interview people from the same party.
Yes.
And it's that balance of, they're not a news channel, they're an entertainment channel, and nothing wrong with being a targeted entertainment offering. And is doing, if you compare it to other news channels, it's potentially doing quite well. If you compare it to other entertainment channels, well, obviously not doing very well. But if it caters for that universe.
Yeah. Is it still in the ratings? I haven't checked, but I should have checked. Is it still doing better than Talk TV, et cetera, now that Dan Wootton's gone?
Yes, it's still doing better than Talk TV. And also, it's at some points, particular sort of average points of general TV news, it can exceed BBC as well, because it's got a consistent audience that are there every day. The BBC, of course, are rolling out a new news service to Gaza. BBC News Arabic is going to be produced out of London and Cairo and provide listeners in Gaza with the latest information and developments, as well as safety advice on where to access shelter, food and water supplies. Maggie, it's for an hour a day currently. Is this an important service for the BBC to provide?
Oh, I think it's essential, yes, because you do need a trusted voice, and there are people out there who probably don't have, if they can get access to it. I mean, it's a small good deed in a very, very nasty world.
Mm. And it's what the BBC and the World Service end of things should be doing, isn't it?
I think it's brilliant they're doing it, really, because, they actually could have faced criticism from some...
I'm sure they still will.
And I'm sure they still will from some ludicrous people, but it seems exactly what they should be doing, and just, whoever decided to do it needs to be commended, because it's going to be really helpful if you're in that extraordinarily dire situation. Yeah.
Okay, there's just time for the media quiz, this week entitled Setting the Record Straight. I'll quote a statement to the press published after a particular news story. You tell me who said it and about which story. So buzz in with your names if you know the answer. So Boyd will say...
Boyd.
And Maggie, you will say...
Maggie.
Let's play Setting the Record Straight. Right, a poll should not have appeared alongside an article of this nature, and we are taking steps to help provide...
Oh, Maggie, yes.
Who did that response?
Well, that was The Guardian. They had a story about a woman, a water polo woman, age 21. I think she was in Sydney, and she was murdered. And they just ran the story because obviously they have a big Australian side to them. And Microsoft added an AI poll with three options about how they thought she might have died, how people, I mean, talk about utterly tasteless, utterly horrible. I mean, quite evil, really.
The brave new AI publishing future,
it's a
Boyd.
Very, yes.
Terrifying, yes. I mean, that does. It's a very good example of untrammelled. Just let people have a, because we can, we'll let people vote on the air. Well, horrendous.
But also, isn't it? It's one of those things you look at and go, well, of course they've got a poll system because that's easy. Isn't it? That's an easy thing to
absolutely,
do.
Absolutely.
Read this. Create a poll from it.
Yeah. No one check it. No human being involved at any point. Just churn it out. Yeah.
So Maggie, you did pick the right story. That you did say it was The Guardian. That was Microsoft's response. They said it should not have appeared alongside.
I think
half a point.
That's
fair enough. But you're absolutely right. It's an example of how things go wrong.
Okay, so looking for who said this response. The sketches in which the character makes references to the appearance of a race of a series of people is intended to expose and ridicule some of the outdated prejudices and racism that's
Boyd. This is Ofcom, isn't it? Is it Ofcom?
Well, the statement's from, not Ofcom, it's from
the BBC.
It is from the BBC.
Like, similar to Maggie, I get half the point, yeah. Yes, this is people have found an old sketch in Little Britain.
Which I assume is all on iPlayer.
It's all on iPlayer, yeah. Some of it isn't. With a racist character making racist remarks about to an Asian person, and people seem to not realise the context that it is about race, making fun of the racist character. I mean, there's various Maddox and David Williams have apologised for various racist elements of Little Britain back in the day. I don't think this is absolutely not an example of
they've already got actual ones. This is maybe not
this
a real
is
one.
Absolutely not. This is fine. This is making fun of a racist person. This is absolutely acceptable. So it's someone's just misunderstood.
I mean, Maggie, it's one of the challenges of sort of video on demand, isn't it? And sort of dredging up series from the past, you do get some things that are entirely unacceptable, and also some things that maybe don't work in the light of...
Well, it can't all be only fools and horses, can it? I mean, it's going to obviously reflect changing values and how society has developed from one state where something is acceptable to being completely unacceptable. I mean, I've been to see this film Pressure. I don't know if you've seen it. There's a remake, there's been a re-release of a film made in 1970-odd about... it's all black actors, and it's about the way in which the first wave of the next generation that had come over from the West Indies was treated. And so it's in a kind of pre-done up Notting Hill. And that isn't so long ago to me, and it is absolutely shocking when you actually, and it's based on true I think experiences, so you can see how things move on. Now that's an extreme example, and that is a film, of course, which has been now brought back into a kind of circulation. But no, I actually don't think that Little Britain is going to wear particularly well.
So it's the incredibly high scoring half a point each. It's on to the final one. Who said this? The complainant denied that he still owned a home worth £2.2 million in London, although he would not explain to the committee why this was inaccurate. The complainant also said the article was not balanced or fair.
Oh, this is Maggie, sorry, Matt Hancock, yes. Now, who did he say it to? Oh, it was the Mirror. He's been furious with the Mirror. And he keeps bringing complaints against them. He seems to be a multi-complaining person.
That's probably the nicest thing we can say about him in multi-complaining. Yeah. Well, I'll give you half a point for that, because it is the Matt Hancock story. You are correct. The comment was from Ipso, the people has a hotline to complain, and most of these have been dismissed.
Hugely powerful press regulator.
Yes, they decided that a newspaper could describe Hancock's home as a love nest.
I mean, on what? Yeah, I mean, who's advising him that he decided to complain about the love nest reference? I mean, come on, I mean, that's absolutely absurd, isn't it?
And are you not watching him as a SAS star at the moment?
In between his appearances on reality TV, he managed to find things to complain about. I've watched the clips of him. I can't put myself through watching the whole thing of SAS. Who Des Wins, I have to admit, but the clips have been excruciating enough. And he has one, of course, the most embarrassing moment of the COVID inquiry so far, with this revelation that he played a straight bat and actually mimed having a bat and someone bowling a ball at him during the COVID crisis.
Well, again, looking for the Channel 4 reconstruction of that.
Yes,
that
would be. I mean, you can't make that more absurd. The comic strip presents couldn't make that more absurd than it
is. And this afternoon, the evidence was being taken about how he actually was almost volunteering to decide who would live and who would die in the COVID crisis. I mean, this comes across as so crass. And if you remember, he also was a culture secretary for quite some time and you know, deliberating over the future of Channel 4. Fortunately, he was moved on. But
they always are. Yeah. 10 to 12 months, that's how long they survive, isn't it? Yeah. Well, congratulations to Maggie Brown. You're our winner with one point. Congratulations.
This is history. Congrats. I've never won before.
Well, congratulations. You get to lead our format sales operation to Channel 4 and to the new content fund. Sorry, Boyd, you've been bumped from that.
That's fine.
My thanks to Maggie Brown and Boyd Hilton. Boyd, where can people keep up with your work?
In Heat Magazine every week, the Pilot TV podcast every week. If you're an Arsenal fan, Footballistically Arsenal, the podcast. I mean, endless amounts.
And Maggie?
Well, actually, I've got a chapter coming out in a book which is being launched on Monday, and it's reporting the climate crisis.
Oh, lovely. Well, we'll look forward to reading that. Thank you both.
Thank you.
And that's it from us today at the London Podcast Studios. Remember, you can get 25% off your first booking when you use the code MEDIAPOD at thelondonpodcaststudios.com. That's MEDIAPOD at thelondonpodcaststudios.com for 25% off. And please tell your colleagues and bosses about us. Send them to podfollow.com/themediapodcast. Who knows, it may even get you a race. My name's Matt Deegan. The producer was Matt Hill, with support from Ollie Pitt and Maya Cederlund. It was a Rethink Audio production. I'll see you next week.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.